Hello and welcome to the Jam Bass Podcast, and we've got a special edition of The Rundown today as we're coming to you live on tape from Jam Cruise 18. It is the final day of Jam Cruise 18, and we're just coming from the Super Jam led by Marcus King, which lived up to its title. So there's only a few sets left after this, so I think we've got a good handle on what went down. I am joined by three members of the Jam Bass team. We have Court Scott. How are you doing today, Court?
Fantastic, Scotty. Thanks.
Excellent. And we have contributing writer Diana Hank. How are we doing, Diana?
Hey, Scotty. We're doing good. I'm losing my voice a little bit, but, you know, Jam Cruise.
That happens. And then we have Mike Ans, who has been providing our Fish Friday infographics and hopefully will do more as 2020 progresses.
Hi, happy to be here. Excited to talk.
Excellent. Well, we'll start with you, Maya. What were some of your highlights of the trip musically?
So, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Steve Kimmock's Jazz Lounge, which started Steve Kimmock, Baby Kimmock.
Which is John Kimmock, for those who don't know who Baby Kimmock is.
Reed Mathis and Robert Walter. And it was literally like being at a tennis match, watching the dynamic between Robert and Reed. And then George Porter Jr. sat in.
Okay.
And that was pretty mind-blowing. Obviously, Bastard Jazz. Not even going to get into that. I need to
wrap your head around
that. And then Spaga was awesome. Incredible. One more note is it was basically, so Aaron Magner had a piano set in the atrium.
Okay.
Which was like Bisco Unplugged, which was also fabulous.
They did my favorite Disco Biscuit song, Home Again, with Mark Brownstein on bass, Spaga's drummer, and Tom Hamilton.
Everybody cried. It was fabulous.
And Brownie, you know, said before it, he's like, I spend all year just counting down the days to Jam Cruise. And I think that's a sentiment that I share, and I'm sure many others share. How about you, Diana? What were some of your musical highlights?
I definitely have to second the less, favoritism. It was so cool to see him play on the boat, even though it was only one night. both of Ghostlight's sets totally blew me away. It was pretty awesome. The first night they were on the pool deck. Well, the first night they played, they were on the pool deck, and they ended their set, and it was raining, and they ended, and the rain stopped, and it was just a pretty epic moment.
And it was a pretty quick rainstorm, right?
Yeah, it came, and it was pretty hard, and then it was done. So, but it was, everyone left and was kind of like, wow, I can't believe that. I'm a big fan of Eric Benny Bloom. He's a, jokester, and every time he plays, it's a lot of fun. So his Jazz Lounge set, and also his atrium, his little tacky show, was very silly.
What was that show all about?
It was just being himself and just being, busting balls, if you will.
Okay.
Lots of high kicks,
wine, just being funny. And he's such a pleasure to have around. He always brings up the spirit of the boat. So
absolutely.
It was great. And Garage Etoile, oh my God, Charlie Hunter, blew me away.
And what about that set stood out? Was it mostly Charlie? Were you familiar with Charlie coming in?
Can I tell you, quintessential Jam Cruise moment?
Okay.
Diana, have you seen Charlie Hunter before?
No, I have not.
So I'm talking about him, but then I run up to the rail. These big dudes are there. I say, we have an emergency. She's never seen Charlie Hunter before. She's on the rail. And then I turn around. Craig Broadhead
from Turquoise
is behind us. I go, can you explain this instrument to my friend, please? So Craig explaining Charlie's guitar is one of my Jam Cruise highlights.
I was like, who's playing bass? And Maya was like, hurry up, get up here. You have to pay attention to this.
Oh, that is great. And now we come to Court. And Court, this was your first Jam Cruise. While Maya, how many have you been on at this point?
Four, got my robe.
Oh, excellent. And she is sporting it right now. And Diana, this is your second.
Second, yep.
Yes, and then the three of us did a recap last year, which you could check out on our archives. And Court, this was your first one.
This was my first one and not my last.
And how did it compare as to what you expected coming in?
It exceeds all of my expectations. You know, you've heard people, oh, once you go to Jam Cruise, you'll never stop going. And I get it. I completely understand now. It is a phenomenal experience. The boat, the people, the music, it's just like this organism that I want to be a part of forever.
Yeah. And I think one of my favorite parts of Jam Cruise is that it's kind of like a bubble. And, there's no... People aren't going back to their room and watch CNN. And, we're all kind of living in the moment and being present. And
no one's checking their phone.
No one's checking their phone unless they're doing Instagram posts for Jambase. And it's just, and that's why, even getting off the ship at the port stops is a little off-putting. And it's like, do I really want to leave the bubble with my safe bed and all the people that are on the boat for the same reason that I am and everything? And it's just a beautiful thing. And I take it that's something that you got from this
fully
whole
agree.
Experience.
Fully agree.
Excellent. Yeah. And what were some of your musical highlights?
Well, like Diana and Maya, Bastard Jazz really buttered my muffin. It is my kind of weird. And the chemistry that those guys have, I think that they would refer to themselves as brothers from another mother. And it's just so evident. And it's just pure joy to watch them play together and get weird.
Yes.
I'm a big Mo fan, so, I was delighted to see Mo. Their pool deck set yesterday got canceled due to some crazy wind. So they rescheduled them in the atrium, which was just an awesome place to see Mo. It's a three-level room with crystal staircases, and there were flying chickens going across the staircases and stickers being thrown down, and everybody was just super into it. Nice throwdown. Late night in the disco lounge one night, I really enjoyed DJ Brownie. Kind of didn't know what to expect, and he was just throwing down awesome house music. And it was a dance party with lasers, and it was just phenomenal. I was really surprised by that. I'm really looking forward to seeing Charlie Hunter here, because he's playing solo in a moment. He's just such an instrument. Like, his instrument is so unique, and the way he plays it and the way he approaches it. I'm pretty excited about that. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Very good. And did you fathom how this was going to go? I mean, coming in terms of what you expected, is it?
To some extent, yes, because they've done this so many times. Like, it's got to be, people have figured out what works, what doesn't work. The way that Cloud9 has organized it, it's just everything is seamless. Like, if a problem arises, they're on it, they fix it, they reschedule it. Like, there's no hiccups. It's tremendous. I was thinking earlier today, I'm not a sports person.
Okay.
But I know a lot of people play fantasy football, and this is creating your fantasy music lineup. This is where it happens. And I just, thought that was a pretty good analogy.
Excellent. Okay, so outside of the musical highlights, how about bands that you hadn't seen before that you were super impressed with this time? Let's start with Diana. Diana, was there an act that you hadn't seen before that stood out as one that you're really excited to see again, or even a band maybe that you saw in the past and weren't as wowed by but are now?
Yeah, Casey Benjamin's Jazz Lounge set was pretty spectacular. The horns, just like the power in that room. It was like, I feel like they were going to bust out the walls.
Can you talk a little bit about what the jazz, you know, we were saying jazz lounge. What is the jazz lounge?
It's a smaller space that, you know, very small stage, but they can fit as many people as they want in there. And the energy in that room is just like pretty unparalleled. I think, you know, maybe it's not the best room because there's a walkway in between, but everybody's right. into it. Everyone's paying attention. It's pretty awesome. And actually, I checked out Chris Jacobs' band last night, which I'd never heard of them before. I think they're from Baltimore, somebody said.
Yes.
They're kind of like a rootsier Americana sound, and I loved that. That was awesome. I'd never heard of them before. We just stumbled in there because I think the pool deck was closed last night, so people were just finding other stuff to do, and I really dug that a lot, kind of a bluesy sound.
And I think, you know, when shit happens, you roll with it on Jam Cruise. Yeah. And the fact that the pool deck was closed gave a great opportunity to a number of bands that might not have been seen by other people. And while I've seen Chris Jacobs play in various projects in the past, I had never seen his actual band. And I thought that set crushed, or the parts of it that I saw. Yeah. They did a killer cover of Don't Do It. Tony Hall sat in. Ivan Neville sat in. Lebo sat in. And Chris just seemed to really find form. And his bass player, both Maya and I play bass, and I was just wowed by his bass player, which is saying a lot because Les Claypool was on this guy.
Also, I have to mention Joe Hertler and TRS.
And the Rainbow Seekers?
Yeah, they were great. They were a different kind of sound than...
Yeah, very different sound like than anyone else on this boat.
Like a pop-punky sort of. That's like where I come from a little bit before I was into this stuff. And I was having a great time. It was very dancey. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. And Maya, how about you?
As far as people I've never seen before?
Oh, right.
Karina.
Okay.
Blew me away. I was... her jam room... So,
and we're talking about Karina Reichman.
Following up on the fantasy football thing, we brought a lot of newbies on the boat this year.
Who okay.
We're really, you know, you go to a festival, you look at the lineup, and you like, oh, this band's going, sweet, this band's coming. But Jam Cruise is really about the artists, because the jam room is where it's just a mishmash of, you know, guitar from this band, bass from this band, etc. So to see a full hours of just improvisational music happening was amazing. Tony Hall came out with her.
Okay.
And it was just evident that, to me, as a shitty musician, oh, I don't know.
You can fuck away.
It's not about notes. It's professional listening, and it's so evident to see that everyone is listening to each other and not stepping on each other's toes, the patience. So yeah, that set blew me away. And then Joe Marsnick's jam room last night, I think everyone sat in
who
on
wasn't
that.
There
you,
is it's probably
you
easier to list
and
who
someone
wasn't.
Else was on the stage. It was party nonstop.
And I feel like that was a peak moment for Joe's career. Joe has this thing where he has a band called the Joe Marsnick Band, but it's rotating cast of musicians, and he plays with lots of legendary musicians, and all his friendships and collaborations really paid off last night, and you could tell how psyched he was, and it went till 6 in the morning from what I hear. I was asleep, but it went till 6 in the morning, and for comparison's sake, Karina's set went till 4:20, so that was pretty crazy, so really happy for Joe. And how about you, Court?
Agree on the Joe Marsnick jam last night. It was next level. And literally, as I just said, it's easier to say who wasn't in there playing. It was, like, I couldn't keep up with it. I also really like Tank and the Bangos. I really like to see them at a festival this summer. I think that vibe, it's a large band, you know, horns, vocalists. It's just high energy, theatrics, costumes. It's kind of got the whole nine. Really was blown away.
I was particularly fascinated by how different Tank of the Bangas' sound was from one song to the next. I mean, they were all over the place in the best way. I mean, they'd have this beautiful little almost like lullaby song and then something that sounds like Rage Against the Machine. It was pretty wild in that respect. How about things that you'd like to see on future jam cruises? Can we start, Diana?
Sure. Last year I talked about how much of a strong female presence there was. I feel like it's a little lacking this year. Maybe just, you know, Jen Hartswick did the Super Jam last year and they had a lot of all-female bands. I think Love Cannon's set actually got canceled because of the winds and stuff. So just more women on the boat would be awesome. But other than that, it's been spectacular. This boat is amazing. Cloud Nine does a spectacular job of, you know, making everybody happy. And it's awesome. I'm already excited for next year.
Excellent. And Court, how about you?
Excuse me. I agree. It seems like there's a lot of dudes on the boat. That said, I just saw Samantha Fish, and you guys should check her out. I'm always happy with what's presented to me, so I don't really have a wish list like that. One thing I would love to see more on the boat is water stations.
Yes.
It has been really hard to have to get water at the bars, and stay hydrated, because this has been a long week.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is
a marathon. Yeah, that is fair enough.
How about you, Scotty?
I would second that. I would like to see more. You know, we're right now in the Artist Lounge, and it is nice and cool. There were not many places on the boat where it was nice and cool. I don't know exactly what the answer is to that, but I will even say in my room, and this is not on Cloud Nine, this is on MSC, it never was cool. It was always warm. That said, if that's the biggest problem you have in a week, then that's something. I mean, it was just, it's tough. There's so much going on that I felt, especially this year, I missed a lot of moments that I would have loved to have seen. But I don't know what the answer is to that, because I love the ability to pop from one show to another, and there's always so many things going on. So you don't want to cut off one foot to spite the other, and there will only be two things going on, and you're not into two of those things. And I will say that I got to participate in an activity today for the first time. I was on the panel for Wait, Wait, Don't Jam Me with Tank of the Bangas and Corey Wong. And that was a really fun experience. And it was cool to be on the other side, on the stage for something. And I hope to do more of that. And really excited for the 8 podcast segments that we recorded besides this that we will be rolling out over the next few months. And do any of you guys have anything that you'd like to add before we call this a rundown?
I just want to add that this year I did the Masters Camp.
Yes.
If you play anything, it was nerd heaven. Talking like, so
George Porter Jr.
George Porter, sorry. Krasno. Eric Krasno.
Thank you.
Nikki.
Glaspie.
And
there was, who was on bass?
Garrett Sayers was on bass.
Yes.
And he is from the Motet. He's, I don't have
insane
words for him.
Yeah.
But so, and then there was one more guitarist.
Was Luther Dickinson?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, we got it. But
they played Ain't No Use and then started geeking out in the middle. Wait. How did you come up with this part? And then what? Oh, and also people say, so like the drop, they're like, how did you come up with that? So just talking to George about how he develops that, and then techniques with Steve Kimmock. It was really amazing. And then there's time too to jam with the artists, and also like just met a bunch of cool people to jam with that obviously like the same music as me. So that was really an awesome experience.
And, you know, you bring up a good point. Something that I don't want to go without saying is people. And I've just met so many wonderful people over the course of the trip, and people that have been on for a number of cruises that I've never met before, people that are doing their first one. And I walk away with new friends every time. And that's just such a beautiful thing. And you know, this has been an incredible trip. We've got a few hours left to go get it, and then it's kind of like summer camp ending when you say goodbye to all your friends and then you see them again next year. But thank you for listening, and we'll get on to the next segment shortly. Hi, everybody. I'm on Jam Cruise 18 with Chuck Garvey from Mo. How's it going, Chuck?
I'm well. I'm semi-rested.
Yes, yes, we are.
Showed up only 5-10 minutes late.
That's for in musician time, I think that's on time.
I somehow got lost on the boat.
It's a big boat.
It is a big boat.
It will happen. And how has your cruise been so far?
It's been great. It's been great. I didn't front load this jam cruise with a lot of super late nighting, so I'm doing okay now.
Excellent.
I'm a long haul type person, I guess.
So we're now on day 3 of the trip. Yesterday was the first full day, and you guys played your first set. You were in the theater.
Yep.
And as this is the art of the set list, could we start by talking about how you guys formulated the set list for last night?
We do, we go round robin or whatever you want to call it. We all take turns.
Except
Jim right now is not doing it, but Vinny, Al, Rob, and myself just go run through us on a show-to-show basis, and one person will do the whole set. We'll get together for a sound check and maybe go over a couple of things, like a strange segue or like something that's more particular to that show or something unique to that show that we wouldn't necessarily be able to just improvise. And kind of just talk about what we're going to do and how a couple of things are going to flow. And that's pretty much it for the day.
Do those conversations take place at soundcheck?
At soundcheck, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes one person will have a recommendation or a request or something like that, and we'll try and fit that in. But it's generally one person writing the set. Like we talked about before, for the bigger shows like New Year's or Halloween, it'll fall on the one person who's got luck of the draw for it, but we all do it a little bit by committee, depending on what's happening and how we want to put everything together.
Sure,
those are just a little more labor intensive, and we usually all kind of weigh in on that.
And got it, those songs to practice ahead of time. I mean, if you're doing a Star Wars night and
exactly
doing all those songs, you're not that day,
right? That kind of stuff. Well, sometimes we'll pre-produce, we'll make a set list or come up with, you know, those covers, and we maybe rehearse for a couple of days before, like the Star Wars Halloween show. We had a bunch of strange music that we were doing. So
the cantina,
stuff like that, exactly.
And again, using last night as the example, who was in charge of the set list?
Rob did the set last night.
Okay,
and actually, we did a sound check in the theater, but we only went over 2 or 3 songs that were on the set list just to get the sound kind of dialed in, but we didn't do any other
rehearsing or talking.
We just didn't have time for it, so
right.
it was kind of short. So,
and it's interesting, I mean, coming on to Jam Cruise and having 2 sets, having such a huge repertoire and no shows kind of right before, it's like everything's on the table. You guys have so many songs at
sometimes
this point.
Yeah,
it's Where do you even start? If it's your turn to write a set list and it's the beginning of a run, do you start?
Everybody has a different method, probably. Some of us just probably pick the first song and it flows from there. I tend to pick a couple of key songs that I really want to put in the set to start or close sets, or I come up with a couple of segues that I want to do, and those are the anchors for a set, and then, you build it around that. We all do it a little bit differently, I think, but it's pretty much that we have a master set list, and we keep track of the last four or five shows that we've done, so we don't repeat anything. And
is that a written thing or a doc, a Word, a Google Doc or something?
It's
like
a Google
that?
Doc.
Okay, very cool. The morons, I'm sure, would die to see something like that.
I prefer to work on paper, but the Google Doc is very convenient.
Sure.
we try not to repeat anything, and then we don't. We don't do like stats or anything. It's not that crazy. Sometimes we'll go back and say, okay, the last time we were on Jam Cruise, we played these songs. But it's 3 years ago, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
We're kind of blank slate for a set for here. But
if you're coming to Seattle for the first time in a year, you'll typically look at
What did we do for New Year's last year? What did we do in Halloween? We try not to repeat a bunch of that stuff.
Sure. And you have added a bunch of new songs to the repertoire over the past few years, and I'm very excited to hear what you've been working on this past fall. You did very few shows to work on an album,
and
getting very excited to hear what made it. And how have those songs done in terms of incorporating them into set lists?
A lot of the songs that have been debuted in the last 2 years or so they've pretty much stayed in rotation. There are a couple that just come out every once in a while. We had a list of 20 songs that were new and unrecorded that we were considering for this album that we want to put out, and we just by democratic voting process, we narrowed it down to 12, 13 songs. And so in October, pretty much the whole month of October, we were working on those 13 songs. And now we have to, basically they just have to be mixed, mastered, and maybe split into one big release or two releases. It depends. So that remains to be seen.
Right.
We did like the flurry of recording, and now there's going to be maybe a little bit of editing or just figuring out how everything fits together.
Sure.
We'll make a set list out of that recorded material, essentially.
So that's a different kind of art of the set list, the art of the track list.
It is. Yeah. It is an art, and we've talked about that. Rob mentioned that he really likes sequencing an album like a traditional album,
Final
album. So and it is fun to do that because there are constraints, and you also get a certain flow out of that. And sometimes some people appreciate it. For some people, maybe it doesn't make a difference. But
and this age of Spotify, where you skip around, there's less to that. Is there one album that particularly you thought you really liked the sequencing of a past Mo album that...
I can't think of it specifically.
I thought particularly has a great flow to it.
It's definitely longer than would fit on a single vinyl.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I think most of those albums are pretty long, but...
And I guess Wormwood has a specific flow.
Wormwood has
too.
A very specific flow. Yeah, that's a good example, I guess. That's more like a live set. I mean, depending on how you look at it, but it's that definitely is, it was conceived in that way.
special shout out to your first major label release being a 45-minute single of Meat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With a great cover art photo.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm surprised our A&R guy, Michael Kaplan, was willing to do that. He thought it was really funny and a good idea. And yeah. He was kind of coming around to the whole like jam band notion and what our community liked and were looking for, and he was down with it. I actually heard we heard that being played on the radio once.
Oh wow!
The whole thing, but it was out in Montana somewhere.
Yeah, it's like pretty freeform, I would imagine. Yeah,
exactly.
So, getting back to the new material, when you guys have these new songs, was there a feel of, oh, this would be a good set opener or set closer? Have any of those songs fit into specific positions? Of the new material that you've debuted over the past 2 years.
Oh yeah, definitely. But it's, you don't, I mean, for the sake of variety and keeping everyone, including the band, interested, you don't want to have one song always do the same thing.
Okay, that makes sense.
But, and they're all, I guess they're all tools in kind of like getting the most out of the night. So, you know, it depends on the tempo of the song,
sure,
the content of the song, whether or not you can, you know, it has easy ins and outs for jamming or segues or whatever. You know, there are a lot of different factors that make one song a sweet choice for wherever it sits in the set list. But I think they can, there are some songs that are great encore songs or set closers, you know. It's just, you can work up to that moment because they have that kind of, either the power or the release of like the final chorus or how the song builds, you know, all of those things make for a good or bad set closer, depending on
it.
But you don't want to do the same thing all the time.
Right, so you want to mix it up. And
you don't want people being upset about your choices. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I mean, do you hear that? Do you hear?
I don't hear anything.
Yeah, I mean, good. I think that's better. I think
la, 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 la,
more
la, la.
That users should stay away from listening. Now, I want to hear what you guys think is the best decision, not what some schmuck on the internet thinks is the best decision.
It's, you know, we figured out a while ago, and maybe sometimes we have to remind ourselves, but that as long as we are engaged and enjoying what we're doing, that's the starting point for everything, and it maybe those make the best shows or the best sets, and so it really is kind of making ourselves happy. Hopefully that everything else kind of progresses
falls
from
place.
There.
Yeah,
hopefully. But you know, that's, isn't it? It's kind of the same in whatever job you do. As long as you're happy doing what you're doing, you're going to get the best work,
absolutely,
out of it, or the best result. So yeah. But there, I mean, on the other hand, you definitely have to think about getting the best results for everyone and interacting with the crowd and having that.
Giving the people what they want to a certain extent.
Yeah. So.
And
we all want the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of, it's just how you get there.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah. And there are five of us, and we do it by a very democratic process. And I think some people have very specific vision of what they want to see or hear. And so.
Do you think if you saw a stage set list, you'd be able to tell who wrote it?
Of ours?
Yeah. I mean, do people have such distinct styles when it comes to that if you were given a set list blind, you'd
We've
be
talked
able
about
to...
that before. I think so. There's a... Yes. There are a couple tells that everybody has, you know? Like, they're like poker tells. They just, you can spot a couple of things that would maybe I don't know what mine are specifically, other than they might be everyone else in the band would just look at it like, what the hell are you trying to do? That, like, that kind of thing. But I can tell, sometimes we can all tell Vinny's set lists because there are wild key changes.
Okay, right.
The drummers don't always have the same sensitivity to that we do.
Sure.
but those end up being fun shows because those take wild turns sometimes. Yeah. We're definitely not doing the same thing every day because of our different set list writing personalities. That definitely happens.
And how often will you vary from what you go into with the stage set list in terms of when you actually take the stage?
That usually just depends on if some songs go long, or if there's just a radical miscalculation for our, like, the times of some of our songs, which I do quite a bit. I like to have like an alternate short song to end a set. Okay. Or something, just in case. I used to write shorter set lists because the songs in general were a little bit longer. And I think more recently the songs we still jam, we still do segues, but they've tightened up a little bit. So we can get a higher average track count per set, you know what I mean? And so it's a little bit different. So sometimes I think some songs can go long, some can go short. I think it's maybe one or two out of five will knock a song off. One out of five or two out of five. Okay. Shows. But it comes and goes, you know.
Right.
And it depends on the night.
Right.
So it's kind of, I don't know.
Do you have talkback mics to discuss things like that, or you just talk to each other?
We just talk to each other on stage, yeah. We just, like, there are some points where, so another thing that we do, we'll write the set, I'll write the set list on any given night, and we'll go to soundcheck. We'll talk about the segues, we'll talk about what we're doing, and then we also have a setlist meeting just before we go on, half hour before we go on. And sometimes what we'll do is say, okay, at this point in the first set, we might knock this song out depending on how long it's going, and so just look for it, you know, just wait for the high sign. And if we have to cut it, we have to cut it.
Right.
So we'll, like, build an appropriate pressure valve into the set,
yeah,
just in case, you know, like rec chem goes long, or you know what I mean, for example.
Yeah, so, of course.
But in general, it's, yeah. Sometimes we build that in. Sometimes we just try and write the sets, and so they come out to be exactly right. And I'm not always very good at that.
I think you'd be surprised.
Well. From the feedback I get, apparently I'm not very good at that.
Don't listen to those people. Final question. You guys, I think it's been about 2 years at this point that you came back after a hiatus while Rob thankfully successfully battled cancer. And those shows at the Capitol Theater that were your first two shows back in Port Chester, mm-hmm. and were so special. Like, do you recall how those set lists were put together?
Not at all.
Okay, fair enough. I mean,
well, there was a certain attention paid to just making sure that Rob didn't have to sing too many songs.
Oh, okay.
Because he was back, but it took a while for him to get full voice back, and also he said that he got tired very easily. Even after he was cleared, it just takes a while to get back. So there was just, like, trying not to put too heavy a burden on him, basically. But that was one of the only things that we were trying to do, be mindful of while we were writing the sets.
Sure.
But I can't remember. We just tried to write really, you know, fun, fan-centric sets and fun for us because we were just happy to be back.
Yeah, I can only imagine taking the stage after going through that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, yeah. Thank
you. And I'm sure by the time that this gets posted, we'll either have some news about the new album/albums and looking forward to what lies ahead in 2020, which is the 30th anniversary of you starting the band.
How the hell did that happen?
Yeah. One old bottle. One old bottle. This happy out here that brings us to the end of this episode of the Jam Bass Podcast. Thanks to everyone who helped participate. Thanks to Chuck. Thanks to Court. Thanks to Diana. And thanks to Maya. Thanks also to Jake Alexander for producing. Thanks to you for listening. And as always, go see live music.